movies and booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.
Now, we're joined by two people who have absolutely no need for a test of QZ. They are Esther McCarthy and Jean Smullen. Good afternoon to you both.
It's like, you know, when you come in at the end of a conversation, that's just what happened here.
Yeah, it would take too long to explain.
Just out of interest, do you keep all the craziest stuff for just before we come on Friday?
Yeah,
or is it
pretty
a week
much.
Long
no,
effort?
No, it's just. It's for, there are what we would refer to as Friday items. Okay. That would definitely be a Friday item, it must be said. Nothing but awards and medals.
Absolutely, this is it's the wine awards, the independent off license, the Gold Star awards, and we have the two top wines: the red wine of the year, which was also the wine of the year, and the white wine of the year, and they're both fab.
Right. How do they go about choosing them?
Basically, they get about 600 or 700 wines that all the various importing companies send into them. And then they have a panel of tasters of about 30 people, all of whom are mostly WSET diploma level. And they all taste, and then they pick the top wines, and then they're retasted by a group of journalists and experts, of which I was one, I have to say. And then, you know, it's all done blind. So the
You don't know what you're tasting.
So what you do is you make your assessment and you give your points and you write your comments. And when they add up all the points at the end, they figure out who's the best of all the lot, and that's how it's done. Yeah. And I mean, I do a lot. I judge it at competitions all over the world. You know, I was in China, as you know, recently, and so it's a huge business, wine competitions. We've only got a small one here in Ireland, which is run by the National Off License Association. But you know, everywhere in the world there are wine competitions. It's just how people rate wine,
and the labels
mean something to people.
When you're blind tasting, do they give you any information? No. They'll tell you what grape it is, even.
Not on the Nofla one. In some of the competitions I do, like Mundus Fini or Concours Mondial, yes, they will give you some information. But it's all done under this OIVS system, which is the group that coordinates wine globally, and it's the sort of the people who mind all these things. Don't ask me what OIVS means, because I just can't think what it's farting anyway.
Yeah.
Right? But you know, it's the body that oversees wine production globally.
Yeah.
And they have a set of rules that they specify for wine competitions.
Well,
so you have to work
to
them.
Yeah, because from what I understand of it, even if you do this for a job, to blind taste a wine, it can be difficult to identify what it is.
Yeah, it is. And you know, you taste on average about 60 wines in a morning, you know. But I do remember once being on a panel, and we there was a Spanish girl, and we had a load of New World wines, and she was being, I do not know what to do. That's a French accent, but a Spanish accent.
Yeah.
And she was being,
it's like we were there.
She was being stupid about the wines, and because they were New World, they were actually Australian. She was going on about, she didn't understand them. You know, in other words, they're not Spanish, you see. So just as I turned around and went, oh yeah, that's probably Jacob's Creek Cabernet Sauvignon. And when the crib sheet came out at the end, it was. And then she thought I was a genius. But actually, it was just fluke.
Yeah. Because I do remember on the restaurant, the TV show, like years ago, they used to do a thing where they'd bring out the wines blind. And poor Tom Dooley had to try and never got it right. And it became almost torture, you know.
The obvious ones. You'll always get Sauvignon. You'll always get Chardonnay. Gewurztraminer is the easy peasy one, you know. Cabernet is usually pretty easy to... But when they say we're blending them then you're really into it.
Yeah.
So, look, you know, everybody thinks they know something about wine until you're presented with a glass that you haven't a clue what it is. And then it's like, try and figure that. That's why Master of Wines, it's such a difficult exam. Because they will be able to stick their nose in and say, yes, it is actually this. It was grown on the side of this mountain in this particular area and blah. Yeah. I can't do that.
So basically, we're going to try the two best wines in Ireland at the moment as
for
judged.
2019, 2020, yes.
Okay.
And they even have very posh and white wine of the year neck collars that you'll see in all these shops and wine of the year. So look out for those.
Yeah. And why is one white wine of the year and the other one is just wine of the year?
Because when they added up all the points, that was the one that got the top marks, and sometimes it can be a white wine that gets the top marks. Yeah. So this one is actually wine of the year, and this one is white wine of the year. But it could be wine of the year was a white wine, and this red wine would just be red wine of the year.
Does that make sense? Yeah, no, it does. Yeah, I thought it was some sort of sexist thing towards white wines.
No,
the way they have best actress in the Oscar, it should be just best actor. And so, where the two wines? Where are they from? What countries are they from?
French.
French. Okay, French. Good.
Yes.
Good. It's nice to have a bit of old world wines. So today, the Addams family, Esther?
Yes. Did you watch them growing up? Because they I live in one telly channel and we didn't get them. But like, I think you can't overestimate how iconic an American family they have been in entertainment history. Like, they've been TV series. They started life as a cartoon in The New Yorker, actually. They weren't named as the Addams Family at the time, but way back in the late 30s, they did a series of these characters, and they were kind of like single picture cartoons and just kind of describing the characters. But those were created by a guy called Charles Addams. So in the 60s, when it came to adapting the concept for a TV show for ABC, in 1964, just a week before the Munsters started on CBS, would you believe? they decided to name them after Charles Addams on the basis that they were probably based on quirky elements of his own family. You know?
Right, yeah.
So they were kind of interesting. They were quite subversive originally. The whole idea was to flip the perfect American family concept on its head, really. By having all these characters who really didn't care what people thought of them, you know. So that was the idea behind that. We've had video games. We've had two very successful movies in the 90s, of course, with Angelica Houston doing a great Morticia Addams, and Christina Ricci being great as Wednesday Addams. And then we've had they've been Broadway shows. There have been video games. It's like every few years the Addams come back in some guise or another.
Which does beg the question then, do we need another Addams Family
movie? Absolutely. Yeah, well, we need one better than this, I would say. Given the whole idea of the whole concept and start was that they were a bit subversive and a bit out there, this is a little bit too bland, I think, to do the Addams Family justice.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about why later.
Is this a starting from scratch version of the Addams Family, or it kind of following on?
No, it kind of starts from scratch, in the sense they find that big creepy old house and move into it, and they do that, try and bring a new story element to it. There's a whole kind of TV presenter who's spying on all the houses in the vicinity, but it's all of that. There's a bit of plot going on. It's aimed more, I think, at younger kids, though, I would say, this one, and it's animated, of course.
Right, okay. Oh, I see. Right, yeah. Okay, so there's a slight difference there.
Yeah,
yeah, of course. Yeah, there is. Yeah. And the other movie we're going to be talking about today is this just basically an hour and a half long promotional video for Bruce Springsteen?
Yeah, but it's a very good one.
That's not necessarily a bad thing, of course.
That's not necessarily a bad thing. And I should point out, I suppose, this is only going to be in cinemas for one night only. So if you're a fan, you need to chalk down Bank Holiday Monday night and get your tickets organised, because it's going to be one big, huge night in Irish cinemas. But that's it, I think, as far as I'm aware, unless they bring it back, you know,
right,
at some stage in the future.
And so it's going to be shown in how many cinemas on that?
I think it's getting a pretty wide national release. It's Warner Brothers are releasing it, so they're, you know, one of the biggest studios in the country, so I can't imagine it's getting anything less than blanket release, you know.
Yeah. And why are they doing it that way?
Well, he didn't tour with this album, so they kind of took a notion. He's made a few concert films before. Actually, the co-director, Bruce is co-directing here, so he can add that to his many talents. But the co-director here is a guy called Tom Zimney, who's I was talking to him last week, actually. I interviewed him last week. His background was as a film editor, and he first came to know Bruce Springsteen through back like 20 years ago, when he was doing an E Street Band live in New York, and he was asked to bring in his talents as an editor.
Yeah.
Had grown up in New Jersey listening to Bruce's music, and just had to have a little word with himself when he finished fainting.
Yeah.
About, you know, showing up, really, and that he needed to bring his skills on board here. And the two men clicked, and they've been close collaborators ever since. But this is their first time kind of co-directing a film. And I think Bruce just took the... Bruce, do you hear me?
Bruce, your close personal friend, Bruce.
He just took the idea that because he wasn't touring this album, Western Stars, which was released during the summer, that he would perform it as a live concert movie. Just the entire album.
Okay. Well, I suppose, you could see how there's an economic argument for that because I assume he's got an orchestra. It's all very lush and there's lots of strings.
It's a 30-piece orchestra.
Yeah, and that'd be too expensive to bring on tour.
That would probably be a nightmare, a logistical nightmare, even to tour that many people and that many instruments. So, yeah, it's really quite lovely in this. And then it becomes something special because the boss took a notion that he would make it a little bit more than a concert film by doing a little few minutes of a narration or a tone poem, as Tom Zimney called it. I don't think I can better that.
Okay.
Kind of what inspired him and what his thinking was behind the song.
Yeah, because we had this Broadway show. Is there little bits of that in it?
Yeah, but this is much more intimate. It's recorded in a barn, actually, in his ranch.
Of course.
In New Jersey. Yeah. And there's just 15 friends.
A ranch in New Jersey?
Yeah.
You think ranch in New Jersey just full of abandoned cars
I was rubbernecking then, going, who are the 15 friends? Is Brad Pitt in the audience? But I couldn't see. But anyway.
Does Springsteen act or is he just talking and rambling? I hate movies like this.
It's very much a fan film. It is. I wouldn't call it rambling. There's some really personal and honest kind of things that he talks about, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Somebody wants to know, where in China were you at the wine competition?
I was in a place called Yinchuan, which is a city about 800 miles west of Beijing. The Helan Mountain Range and the wine region is known as Ninxia.
Right, there you go.
And the wines, it's the Omadoc of China, and the wines are very, very good. And you've people like Lenz Moser making wine there, and there's a lot of French and Italian, and Domaine Chandon is there as well. Moët & Chandon have a winery there, and they're growing Chardonnay Pinot Meunier and Pinot Noir and making Chinese sparkling wine, the sort of champagne in per se, but they can't call it champagne, obviously. It's quite sweet because the Chinese don't like dry wines, particularly they don't drink a lot of white wines either. And so their Brut is actually all of it is quite sweet. Because when he gave me the Brut, I said, oh no, have you got the dry wine? That is the dry wine. Yeah.
Ooh. Okay, but you have to be diplomatic, of course. It's China. Right, we'll take a break, back in a couple of minutes.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief,
brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.
Five 3 106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cent, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Just referring back to the testicuzzi that we were talking about earlier on, Mark says, I got a knee in the testicles last night in rugby, and I tell you, the thoughts of that jacuzzi yolk has me salivating. I'm surprised I still have them. It was such a hard knock. You mixed your metaphors horribly there, Mark. You might want to put a bit more think into your text messages the next time. Esther and Jean are with us for Movies and Booze. And a fair few people, since you brought up the subject of China, wondering, can you get Chinese wines?
Yes, you can. Yeah. And there's one, and we visited this lovely lady called Fran Fang, and her wines are actually available in Ireland through Liberty Wines. And actually, there's an Austrian guy called Lenz Moser, and his wines, he makes this white Cabernet, and it's recently been launched in Ireland. And actually, he's coming to Ireland next week or the week after, as far as I know, and I'm hoping to meet him. So, yes, there are. And I know one place that definitely has some Chinese wine is Mitchell and Son, so there is, but it's a small amount.
Yeah, would it be expensive?
Yeah, it's quite pricey.
It's travelled a fair amount, of course. Somebody says, does it not get freezing in winter in that part of China and ruin the grapevines?
What they do is they bury the grapevines, so they actually operate on an 8-month season, and they have to literally, it's very, very work intensive. They have to bury all the vines, from about this time of year, from about end of October, and then they dig them up at the end of March, so it's
crikey.
Yeah, involves a lot of work.
That's a lot of work. Given China's such a big country, why did they then decide to start planting vines there?
Well, I mean, that was kind of, that was coal mining territory up until about 15 years ago. It was scorched earth. And so literally because the Yellow River runs through it and it's a desert and it's protected by this mountain range called the Helen Mountain Range, they realised that it was an ideal place for grapes to grow. So they literally, in 15 years, it's gone from being a desert to being a beautiful oasis in the middle of the desert.
Yeah.
The city's called Yinchuan. It has 2 million people living in it. It's absolutely beautiful. Everybody drives SUVs. You might as well, you could be in California, to be honest with you. And I think it's a kind of a wealthy part of China. It's where sort of more elite and rich people would live.
Yeah.
But it's beautiful, beautiful place,
right,
you know.
Okay.
But the wine regions are dotted all over China. Even just outside Beijing, you'll have regions. There's quite a lot of wine regions. But that's the only one I've actually visited, yeah, is Yinchuan.
Dermot wants to know, I'm wondering, is there anywhere in Ireland that stocks Fresco Baldi wines?
Fresco Baldi, yeah, that should be in Ireland. I haven't heard that producer for a long, long time. Lovely, lovely wines. They used to be here. As far as I know, they still are. I think they're more than likely going to be wines that you'll find in restaurants. That would be my kind of feeling, given the quality level of them. But hey, if somebody out there has Fresco Baldi, let us know and we'll pass it on.
Yeah. My daughter asked to watch the movie Gremlins by an older kid in the neighbourhood. She's been plaguing me to watch it ever since. She's 13, but I think she's too young for it. Despite it being a 12s movie, I haven't seen it in years, but I remember it being very scary, says Aisling. Aisling's obviously looking for parenting advice here.
I think it was quite gory, if I remember. There was a lot of splattering and stuff involved.
There was. They were nasty little creatures.
Yeah,
they were,
yeah.
You know, yeah.
But I think if she's a year over... I don't,
she's,
yeah,
13.
You know your child.
Yeah, yeah, that's,
well,
it's always that. Yeah,
it's
not. Forget, ignore the age. It's just
they want to sleep with the light on at night, or they just, you know. I think, yeah, you trust your instinct on that one, I'm sure.
Mark says he received a bottle of 2017 Celestia Tierra Costers del Cio. Do you know anything about it? Can I get this in Ireland, and if so, where?
It sounds like it's Spanish. Is it Costa del Segre?
Yeah, that would be my fabulous accent, probably.
Accent, yeah.
I brought you there. Yeah.
Celeste, and I think that might be the Torres wine, and that's definitely here, yeah. If it's Celeste, that's a very good wine, and it's made by Miguel Torres' family. Well, not Miguel anymore, he's retired, but the son, Miguel Jr., is the winemaker now.
Some medical advice. This person doesn't want to give their name, and you can see why. As they say, it's incredibly embarrassing. This will sound strange, but I love wine, but I get terrible diarrhea from it. Is there a reason for this? Is there some laxative agent in it? Is there something I could have like wine, but not wine, for the sake of my health?
I'm not a doctor.
Yeah.
I honestly can't.
I've never heard that
question.
One before.
Yeah.
Wow.
My only advice, and I'm really sorry, is go and talk to your GP about it.
Yeah. Can you get a spicy wine that isn't mulled? Something cinnamony?
Not really, because, well, I mean, you will get wines that have that sort of raisin Christmas pudding characteristic in it because they've been aged in wood, and the style is quite spicy, but it's a very subtle spice. It doesn't actually, you don't think, oh yes, this has lots of cinnamon in it. But, you know, yeah, I've tried red wines, like some of the Amaronis that I've tried, and it's literally like recently I was over in Italy visiting Rizzardi, and we had one of their premium, the Calcone Rizzardi Calcone Amarone, and literally it was like eating Christmas pudding, you know what I mean? It had all that spice, but in that very subtle kind of way, not sort of like when you get your cinnamon stick and put it in your mulled wine. So there'll be nuances, but it won't smell like cinnamon, no.
I loved the first Zombieland when it came out 10 years ago. I wonder if the sequel is as good. Has Esther seen or heard much?
I loved the first one as well, and I haven't gotten around to the second one yet. It was just released last weekend. I've heard it maybe just too long a time in between the two films,
and it has
lost its allure a little. All the cast returned, though, so I will go and see it out of curiosity, see what brought them back.
I'm turning 30 next week, but I'm so excited for Frozen 2. I have no kids, but I really want to see it when it's released. Is this strange? That's more of a psychological question than anything else.
As a Paddington 2 mega fan here, I'm not going to pass judgment on anybody else.
I can well see how a lot of adults would love it.
I actually thought it was very... I know people, you know, history hasn't been kind maybe to Frozen, in that people just go, that song again, you know, and they were tortured by their children.
Yeah, it's not that Frozen was bad.
Very well made.
It's an excellent film. It's, it's just the repetition. Anything, too much of anything is too much. Kev says, stuck in New Jersey for the last 3 years and it's just the worst place. People are ill-mannered troglodytes driving us around as garden state me arse. The only redeeming thing about the place is that the boss is from here. He's the man. I've driven by his ranch, slowly in stalker fashion. Couldn't see much, but just to be in the vicinity of the genius is enough for me. Greatly looking forward to his new film that was filmed in his barn that I drove by. There.
Yeah, and the
there
barn,
you go. Good man, Kev.
The barn is like kind of a character in the film as well. They use it very well, actually.
Right.
Yeah, and it really lends an intimate feel to the concert. It does make you feel like you're there a bit more, you know what I mean?
Yeah, okay.
In the audience, yeah.
On the 13-year-old and Gremlins, she's 13, for God's sake, let her watch it. These are complete strangers giving you advice about your children. Now, she can always turn off Gremlins if she's too scared. It's not like she's being forced to watch it through to the end. David says Frescobaldi wines available in carry-out off licences. Certainly the one in Carrick and Shannon has it.
And carry-out, they've got about 80 shops all over the country. So if it's in one, it's most likely to be in a few of them, all right.
Tony the bird lover in Ballinasloe says, hey, Sham. I'm off to France tomorrow. Can you ask Mrs. Wine what's a nice vino to go with a frite a ortolan? Oh, yeah, me hoop. Ortolan is that thing you have to eat with a bag over your head because you're so ashamed to eat it.
Right, no, yeah, okay. You know, you've lost me completely.
I know, it's incredibly cruel. I forget now what it is they do to the bird, but it's something
horrific. Oh, and even I haven't heard of that one, yeah.
I think General de Gaulle, it was his last meal or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you're in France.
Yeah,
there's lots
I don't
of
think
wine.
I don't think you're going to get that, Tony, but nice try. Right, let's move on to our
can
first
I
wine.
Just
and before
with
we do
just
that,
one
yes.
quick thing.
Yes, indeed.
Wine fairs.
Yeah.
All of the independent off licences have wine fairs in the run up to Christmas, usually in November. This is wine fair season. This is a great way. It's a great night out. They normally charge a small amount, the price of a bottle of wine. You go in, you taste the wines. It gives you an idea of what to buy in the run up to Christmas, and it's good fun. And usually they'll have winemakers there, and, you know, it's been very much the circuit for the last 30 years. So I'm just going to run through a few of them. Starting in Dublin on the 5th of November, James Nicholson, JN Wines, will be in the Cliff Townhouse, tickets €25. Dublin Castle, O'Brien's Autumn Wine Festival on Friday the 8th, Saturday the 9th, tickets €30 on their website. Cork, O'Donovan's on the 8th of November, the 17th, God, I remember being at the first annual Cork Wine and Craft Beer Fair at the Clayton Hotel, tickets €15, and you get them in O'Donovan's or on their website. Clontarf is very lucky on both the 14th and the 15th in the golf club. There's two wine fairs. One on the 14th is Martin's off license in Fairview, and on the 15th, Clontarf Wines, they'll be having one. So the Denzians of Clontarf are well catered for. And then Malahide, one of the 22nd, again, I did the first one of that one too, the Gibneys of Malahide in the Grand Hotel, €15. And that's always been one of the best night outs. Mm-hmm. I'd like 22nd, 2 years they've been going. And then in Tala, the very first, Malloy's are having their Christmas wine fair in the station in Main Street in Tala. Tickets are €10. And finally in Blackrock Cellar, in their shop in the village, big Christmas wine tasting, tickets €15, and you'll get that in the shop or on their website.
Yeah. Now, yeah, I just had to look this up because it was scratching at me. An ortolan is the name of a bird. What they do is they catch them in the wild.
Right.
Then they put them in a completely dark cage. And for some reason, their reaction to that is to eat as much as possible. And they wait until the ortolan has bulked up. And usually they get to like twice the size they are. Then their method of killing them is that they drown them in Armagnac. And then you eat them whole. And apparently it was Mitterrand's last New Year's Eve meal included an ortolan.
Okay.
That's horrible.
Right. That's horrible, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you can still do it. That's France for you. Isn't it great? Yeah. Right. What's our first wine?
We'll start with our first wine. This is the 2018 Domaine Lafarge Cadera. Sorry, my pronunciation is terrible. 1995. And a couple of the Nofla outlets you'll get it in are Bagot Street Wines, the Vintry in Rathgar, Redmond's in Ranelagh, Lots and Company, Sweeney's in Dublin 3, Drink Store in Stony Batter, and also on Wine Online. Now, this comes from the Languedoc, but it's actually from an area called Côte Catalans, which is really in the Roussillon. It's Languedoc Roussillon. So you're over really near between Perpignan and the Pyrenees foothills. And the fellow who makes this wine is he's very, very, you know, famous winemaker, Jean-Marc Lafarge. And he farms about 400 acres of vines in the Roussillon. Now, he's got great reviews, decanter.com, JancisRobinson.com. They love them. But this wine is made from Chardonnay, which is not a native grape of the region. So the wine is designated IGP, which we used to know as Vin de Pays. Basically, the grape is not native, but the winemaker is bloody good. So this is Chardonnay from Roussillon. Try it, right? What makes this wine slightly different is that they actually use the lees from Viognier. So, like, not getting too complicated about this. The dead yeast cells used to ferment Viognier, which is a native grape of the region, are added to the Chardonnay, which is the blow-in, during the fermentation process. And that, by doing that, they create a certain creaminess and added texture to the wine. Basically, it works. It's really, really good. They also, they age about 30% of the blend in oak, only 30%, so that you're not getting that big sort of vanilla kind of spice thing that people have just don't like anymore. It's Chardonnay, but it's Chardonnay with a touch of oak that you just get the basic nuance of it. Adds a bit of power to the wine. Now, according to the importer, this wine is also sold in the number one restaurant in the world, which in 2019 is the three-star Mirazur, which is run by an Italian-Argentinian chef, Maru Coglagreo, in Menton in France. So obviously you have to add this to your try me list. I tried this earlier on. I think this is absolutely lovely. You're certainly getting the lovely kind of, there's apricots and stone fruit. And I'll just read you the note from tasting. This wasn't me wrote this note. This was from one of the tasters. Ripe and round with exotic fruit nuances and a stony mineral edge. A truly fine wine. And you couldn't go and find a better way to describe it. Lovely wine. And it's $19.95.
Okay, well, that's not bad as well. Yeah. I was waiting for you to say 40 quid or something. Okay, that's not bad at all for that.
But it's lovely. And it's, yeah. And again, you say the C word, you say Chardonnay, everybody goes, I don't like Chardonnay. Try this. It's definitely worth a try.
Yeah, absolutely. I went to see Judy on my day off last week. I had it up to here with Hollywood movies about famous dead singers. It represents a complete failure of imagination on behalf of the studios that have to continually dig up the stories of people from Ray Charles to Freddie Mercury when there are so many films that could be made about more relevant and contemporary topics. I, for one, will be boycotting this Judy Garland business. I'm fuming here.
Why did they go then?
I don't know. Why are you so angry? Yeah, go and have a lie down. You really need it. Dara says, can you ask the booze expert if there's anyone who sells a wine called Duckhorn in Ireland? Was in America for work last month and had a bottle of this and it was amazing.
Yeah.
Also, Aer Lingus has a really good Canadian red wine on the plane from a place called Henry of Pelham that I can't find anywhere here.
Canadian wine is very, very hard to get here and we probably won't get it. But Duckhorn should be here. And there's lots of California's really... You know, it's premium stuff and you'll find it in the specialist off licenses and a lot of them tend to be on restaurant lists and particularly the really posh restaurants, you know, like Shannon's or FXB's where there's lots of steak and, you know, people have expense accounts and go
money.
In and spend
lots
of money. So Duckhorn is a fabulous, fabulous wine, but it's at the pricier end of the spectrum.
Ah, right. Okay.
So it is going to either be an independent off licenses or on a restaurant list.
Yeah. I recently received two bottles of red from France. Callon Seagor 2005 is the name. Is this one to put away for future reference?
That's a good Bordeaux. Callon Seagor is a good 2005, not a bad bit of vintage either. So yes, we'll definitely keep that one.
Fiona says, question for the lovely wine lady. I forgot to buy champagne when on holidays in France this year and my son's 18th birthday is in a few weeks' time. Could you recommend something nice that won't break the bank? The family celebrations will have guests who know their wines but aren't snooty.
Well, I have my little book here with the Gold Star Nofla wines. And now these are the thing about champagne is that you are going to be, these are all under 60 euro. So it'll be between 40. Realistically, you're going to pay between 40 and 60 euro for a decent bottle of champagne. You can get good value champagne. Like I know some of the Aldi and Lidl and Tesco and Super Value all have some very, very good champagnes in and around the 25 euro bracket that won't break the bank, that are absolutely fabulous and very, very well made, and Dunstores as well. Let's not leave them out either. But you will find them in supermarkets. They have what they call the buyer's own brand. They sort of, they're competitively priced and they're usually very good quality. But the Gold Star winners, there's three champagnes here, and certainly the first one, Louis Roederer, the premier non-vintage champagne brut. Now that will be in about the 55 euro bracket. That is lovely. That is a really, and I actually tasted that one. That's a very good one. And I know Roeder very well. Piper Heisig, that's another one. Again, it's going to be in the 60 euro bracket. And a very, very nice champagne that should is very underrated and people don't see a lot. Champagne Gosset, extra brut non-vintage. And it says tiny persisted bubbles, concentrated pear fruits, classy. Again, all in the 60 euro bracket. You'll get those in the independents off licenses. Certainly, you can, I could recommend them. But yeah, it's like anything. It's if you pays for what you get. If you're looking for something really good for a special treat, it is worth paying a little bit extra.
Oh, somebody's texting to say Duckhorn wine is sold in Avoca in Rathcoole. There you go. I didn't even know the Avoca sold. Maybe they sell it in-house.
It's Kilmechanic. They have a Mitchell and Sons have a wine shop in Avoca in Kilmechanic.
And maybe it's that.
I don't know if there's a wine one in Rathcoole. I don't think they're in. I think there is in Kilmac, all right. Yeah.
Yeah. If you want a spicy wine, might I suggest an Austrian wine, somebody says. I finally got to see Joker and I loved it. Why is it getting so much hate? I read a few negative reviews to genuinely try to understand. All I'm getting from them is that it isn't as good as Taxi Driver. Can Movie Lady shed light on the hate? Alan wants to know.
I was middling on it, as you know. I think I'm the only person who was middling on it. People, it's this year's Marmite film. People seem to either love it or thoroughly hate it. I think either assertion's a bit extreme for me. I thought it did a lot of things well. I think it doesn't do a lot of things as well as it could or should do or as it had been hyped to do, especially how it addresses and looks at mental illness and this man's decline. I thought it was on really shaky ground at times there. But
in the sense that the psychology was simplistic or
simplistic and also it drew very broad strokes about mental health, I thought, in a potentially harmful ways. But as an action film, I thought it was pretty good. Joaquin Phoenix is really good in it. So I find it fascinating how much it's splitting people out and kind of cool.
Yeah.
I love movies like that.
Which is, but is it maybe the politics of it? Because it's, you know, one of the things it's trying to do is it's trying to provoke a reaction in audiences. Plus, it's nodding towards extreme right wing politics, incels and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, you can interpret all of that into it. There was a lot of nonsense, and I call it nonsense because it was from people who hadn't seen the film, because there was a lot of that being written about it before the film even came out. But it was certainly I was certainly uneasy with the whole politics of it, especially in the second hour. It didn't sit well with me at all, I have to say.
Yeah.
And then you have to go, is it because, I've been thinking about this since, like, Todd Phillips has really, he has rewritten the whole kind of comic book thing in a way, and I think maybe what's not been said enough about Joker is that he really kind of punked it up a bit and kind of made it really gritty and realistic and grounded in something. And I think maybe that's why people are having harsh reactions both ways to it, because they're not used to this kind of material being handled in this fashion in comic book films.
Okay, yeah, you know what I mean? It's usually glossier.
Yeah, or it's fantastical, so you get away with it because it doesn't feel realistic. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So maybe that
is interesting, because John Vardy was in yesterday reviewing the new Watchmen series in Sky Atlantic, which is a superhero franchise, but it is again far grittier and has all sorts of contemporary resonances about.
And even when the film The Watchmen was released, it aroused a lot of controversy for similar reasons. You know,
Somebody else says they didn't think Robert De Niro was great in it. I assume they mean Joker, not Taxi Driver. I thought he phoned it in.
No, I thought he was good in it. I'm just glad to see him not act.
Playing the Bills movies anymore.
So many years there, he was churning out terrible stuff. So I'm very excited for that. Now, it's very much a supporting role. And then I'm very excited for The Irishman as well, which
I can't wait to see that.
Next week, I'll get to see that.
On a big screen. Yeah, yes. That's the only place, really. And Brian says, I went to Judy with low expectations after all the so-so reviews, but was far better than Bohemian Rhapsody, very mediocre, and Rocket Man. Was quite deep, moving and very engrossing.
I liked it a lot. I see the shortcomings of it. I think it's a great performance in a good film, but I think some of the detail of how she was treated late in her life was just so shocking, and even in her childhood, that it kind of, I found it a really emotional film. But I have to say there, though, Rocketman's a far better film. Rocketman's really good.
So would Rocketman be the best of the three?
Yes.
Okay.
I think so.
Okay. You can direct your hate text to 53106. What movie would you like to review?
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.
Spent 35 years trying to learn how to let go of the destructive parts of my character.
Hey, I'm just traveling up the road.
And I still have days when I struggle with it.
Catch me now, 'cause tomorrow I'll be gone.
We all have our broken pieces, emotionally, spiritually. In this life, nobody gets away unhurt. And we're always trying to find somebody whose broken pieces fit with our broken pieces and something whole emerges.
There you go. That's Western Stars. Okay, right. So it's not a concert film. You don't sit down and watch a concert.
You kind of do, but it's so much more. And as I say, I was fortunate enough to talk to the co-director, Tom Zimney, for this. So I do know what happened. It was supposed to be a concert film. And Tom Zimney, his background is in editing, so he was, you know, all on top of that stuff. And quite late into the production, Bruce rang him and he said, he actually joked that you have to be ready for this with Bruce Springsteen, that he takes spontaneous notions, basically.
Yes.
And he took a notion and he rang him quite late into the pre-production stage and said, I've written the script. And Zimney was like, what script? We thought we were making a concert film. And it turns out, so what he's done is, it's a lovely album, actually, first of all, and I hadn't gotten around to buying it. So it's a real treat, if you haven't got this album yet, to watch it, hear it and watch it for the first time in this format. It was special. But it's a very melancholy album. I think it's probably his saddest since The Ghost of Tom Joad, you know, and it's very reflective and all of that. So it's kind of a really intimate film to watch. And you hear from the clip there, he's been talking about his own failings in his life. I think over the last couple of years, actually, he talked about how he's struggled with depression for 30 years on and off. Mm-hmm. You know, the man who's danced and filled the world with joy and you know, been the biggest outdoor draw in Ireland and all of that, you know, battling his own demons. So that's really interesting. Although Chris has always hinted at, I suppose, in some of his songs. So what he's done is contextualized each song and kind of brought it back to his own life. And so there's a little kind of 2-3 minute film before every live performance of the song. So that's where the editing and the kind of cinematic elements come into
it. And what's the setting of that? Is this like Bruce sitting in a easy chair looking out the window?
They took off up to the Joshua Tree Desert, following in the footsteps of U2, and did a lot of the photography up there outside California. Some of it's quite cinematic, like there's galloping horses and things like that. And then there's him kind of joking about his own reputation as well. You know, when Prefab Sprout brought out Cars and Girls years ago, he was quite annoyed, apparently, by that because it was supposed to be a little
dig at him.
Yeah. But he actually has a dig at himself and his own obsession with cars in the film as well. So it's a really... he's gone full cowboy in this one. He's nearly 70 now, and it's serious. And even in the title, like Western Stars, one of the songs, they're called Tucks on Train, Somewhere North of Nashville, those kind of songs. It feels very close to being a country music album. But what, of course, makes that a bit different then is the addition of a 30-piece orchestra.
Yeah, but it's lush country music.
Lush, kind of fancy country music, and it's really beautifully done. Not very innovative in terms of filmmaking other than the little vignettes, I suppose you call them. It's just, you know, a few cameras paired on stage and him doing his thing with Patty very much by his side. And this feels like, it's never totally spelt out, but this feels like a love song to her, really, this whole film. It goes into their own kind of marriage and relationships and stuff, as well as some personal details in among some of the songs there.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Given the circumstances in which they first got together.
Yeah. For sure. And he does actually refer to, he did say that, you know, earlier in his life, he always hurt the people he loved the most.
Yeah.
And he drove people away. And you do wonder who and what he's referring to and all of that there, you know. So it's very personal and very honest, I would say. And the fact that they're narrated by Springsteen himself, who's 70 now, going into his 70th year, imagine, and he sounds grislier. He's gone full Jeff Bridges now with the speaking voice.
The voice is, actually, speaking voice is kind of quite shocking compared to his singing voice, which hasn't aged that much.
Yeah, no, you hear the age in his, and I think it's a very reflective, you know, it's not... it's not spelled out, but it's there in the songs. Like, he's taken stock, you know, he's 70, he's taken stock of his life. I think the fact that he, I think he did a book in the last couple of years around all of these teams as well and all of this personal stuff and his own struggles. So I think it's an artist who always manages to be fascinating, bringing you a whole new dimension here again, really. And just the album's great. It's really good.
Oh, no, and the reviews of my best album for years.
I'm surprised it passed me by, and it's a real treat to see it live on the big screen, I would say. And I just want to remind people, Monday night, October 28th, that is the only plan at the moment for it to be screened in Irish cinemas. So if you want to see it, get your bank holiday free and sorted.
Right. Get to see it. Yeah. Somebody's texting to say, wow, he sounds old. Liam says, why at this time in his life is he examining his character? Would you be bothered? You would. You would, Liam. Of course you would.
It's a good inspiration for songs and albums.
Well, that's true. And plus also, you know, you should never rule out the possibility of self-improvement, even in a small way, no matter what age you are. And if you don't, then you turn into just a cranky old yoke that nobody really wants to hang out with. Esther is obviously a fan. If you weren't and had a general interest, would you like it, says James?
I can't say, really. I can't say. It's a concert film with, you know, introductions into each song. I think you're going to get a richness out of that if you love the artist, which I do.
I would have thought, I was thinking of watching the It remakes over the weekend, with it being Halloween and all. I haven't heard great things. What does Esther say?
First one was grand. It was, I think I gave it a 3-star review. It was, it's nicely scary, especially towards the finale, and it's well set up for the second one, which is when they all come back 27 years later. So it's a 2-parter. It's based on the one novel, obviously, but it's a 2-hander. I didn't like the second one at all. I was really disappointed with
that's
it.
That's right.
And I thought there was some elements of it that were a bit nasty, actually.
Tony says, I think it's a dangerous idea for DC to make a whole movie about one of their villains. This is the Joker, obviously. All of their baddies actually have very little backstory, not to mention motivation. It works when they're featured characters, but not as the main subject of the narrative. And maybe he does have a... Because, basically, plot of Joker is... boy has terrible upbringing, turns out evil. The end.
That's kind of pretty much it. And when you scratch the surface, I think, of the new film, that's there is a whole lot of nothing there besides the really good elements of it, you know.
Yeah.
But I think the Joker, if there was any baddie that was ripe for making a standalone on it, was the Joker, though. He's just this iconic character. People are fascinated with him. I mean, people talk about who was the best ever Joker in ways they don't talk about other baddies.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Please ask the wine lady where I can get my hands on Greco di Tufo. It's my favourite wine and I can't get it anywhere.
You should be able to get that. It should be fairly widely available. It's an Italian wine style. It's from the southern Italy. I've seen it quite a lot lately. So it should be in the supermarkets, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. I've texted this in before, and here I am again. Bohemian Rhapsody was absolute shite, says Jimmy. There you go. Thanks, Jimmy. Jimmy likes to ram his opinions home repeatedly. I just Googled Duckhorn. Somebody did ask about this wine earlier on, and it was €97. How can a wine be that price? Honest to God. Right. Well, you did warn them. This is Shanahan's territory.
It is expensive.
My God. What's the name of the Chardonnay at 1995? Now, all the details of the wine that Jean's talking about are on newstalk.com as we speak. But Jean can
It's Domaine Lafage, L-A-F-A-G-E. And the name of the vineyard is Cadera, C-A-D-I-R-E-T-A, or Cadetera. And it's Chardonnay and it's 1995. And the vintage is 2018.
Excellent stuff. Right, we're going to take a break. After that, we're going to talk about the Addams Family and drink the wine of the year.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.
Five 3 106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cent. Esther and Jean are still with us. We've talked about the best white wine in Ireland this year, and we've also talked about Western Stars, the new Bruce Springsteen. It's a one off showing of this movie. Now, someone has texted in already to say that they tried googling where it's on. And couldn't find any information.
Okay, what I'll do is I'll find out where it's showing and I'll stick it up on the Twitter later. Is that right?
All the most tedious people I know are huge Bruce Springsteen fans. That Netflix Broadway thing he recorded was painfully hammy. says one texter, though. Jess says, met the boss in southern France last year. Ooh, fab guy and does not look his age. Indeed not. The Greco de Tufo wines that someone was asking about, you can get them in Bagot Street Wines in Dublin, if you're in the Dublin area. We also had that text in from Jimmy saying he texted in before that he really doesn't like a Bohemian Rhapsody. Ken in Waterford says, I haven't texted this before, but I will again. You're wrong, Jimmy. Somebody else wants to know, is the Duckhorn wine, is that worth 97 quid? I have a special occasion coming up. Would love to buy something nice. Favourite wine is a Three Cru Amarone.
Yeah, and again, well, you obviously like the Italian, and the big Duckhorn would be a big, depends on which grape variety is. I think it's Cabernet Sauvignon. These are big, kind of powerful wines, and yes, you know, it's like anything. It's a handmade, practically. It's a specialized wine, so it's grown on the best vineyard site, and they, you know, all the best goes into it, from the knowledge of the winemaker to the sort of barrels that they use to age the wine in. So, it's not mass produced. It's, you know, it's handcrafted wine, and obviously, it's going to cost a bit more. So, like anything, you know.
Sometimes, though, those very expensive wines, and just because maybe you put this in my head, you mentioned Shanahan's, but you get these like incredibly wealthy people having an incredibly expensive steak, drinking an incredibly expensive wine, but it's all big. There's and sometimes these really expensive wines kind of lack a bit of subtlety. It's just going, yes, you are rich, have
actually,
this wine.
Ben Glatzer was in town this week, and the last time I met him was 2004, which is a long time ago, and he's an Australian winemaker, and I had the most fabulous ribeye, and I don't eat steak that often, with his Amon Ra, his 2013 Amon Ra, which is Syrah, obviously. And oh my God, I died and went to heaven. Seriously. It was, and that's an expensive wine. But like, I'm lucky I work in the trade. But even I think, God, I'm so lucky, you know, to be able to do this. And Ben Glatzer was telling me, great speaking movies, talking about he met Johnny Depp, and he met, who else did he meet? Oh, Jennifer Aniston. They're all fans of his wine. He was telling us all great stories about them meeting at wine tastings in the United States, you know. Johnny Depp was drinking my wine, and The Edge as well. And I said, well, I know Johnny Depp is a big wine fan. He's, you know, he's, that's one thing he's always been known as in the trade, somebody who likes his wine. But to have a really good steak and an expensive wine, it is really lovely, you know. But again, I'm very privileged. It's what I do for a living.
Well,
you
this
know?
Wine is really lovely. This so tell super. Us about it.
This is the 2015 Domaine de la Borée Blanche AOP Minervois. It's $18.99, and again, it's in the Independence. This was wine of the year, so this is the biggie, and it's made by Maison Longueville. And in fact, we've featured one of their wines a couple of weeks ago on the show. But this is a sort of one of the six Premier Cru vineyards in the Minervois region. La Levinière is the name of it. And they're all situated at the foothills of the Montagne Noire, which is basically the Black Mountain, which is about 60 kilometres away from the sea. And the climate here is Mediterranean. You're in a small appellation in the Languedoc. The wine is made from a blend of 70% Syrah, 20% Mourvèdre, 10% Grenache, and is aged in French oak. So anyone who loves Syrah, this is a star wine. And this is an SMG, which is Syrah Mourvèdre Grenache, as opposed to GSM. And we've had questions, people saying, what's GSM? Which is Grenache Syrah Mourvèdre. But the Syrah grape dominates here, and it shows. Grown on limestone, elegant blackcurrant fruits just shine out of the glass. But it has a lovely mineral edge as well. The tasting note says, from the excellent sub-appellation of Minervois-la-Levinière, this wine has spicy, warm, soft, dark fruits. Best in show, a really stunning wine. And, you know, really, make sure Santa has this on your Christmas card list this year, because this is an absolutely super wine. A slow sipper for a hearty dinner.
What's the ABV in it, and how much does it cost?
It costs $18.99.
Okay, not bad.
And the ABV is 14%.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
For a 14%, wine, which is up there, you wouldn't think it was.
No.
Oh, all right. That's fantastic.
And even look at the colour. It's like, it's got a lovely browning. It's showing its age, but Very subtle wine. And it's still quite young. 2015 is the vintage.
Rob says, not just Bohemian Rhapsody, all Hollywood biopics are crap. They'd be better off rattling a tin cup and asking for any spare Oscars. Doesn't Springsteen's daughter show jump for the US Olympic equestrian team? She does, I think.
I think that's a fact.
I think she does, yes.
Yeah, I think so.
And she was at, in the RDS doing the Aga Khan.
Yeah. And was he over?
Yes, there he was. She's on the American team, if I vaguely remember that. Yeah. I read it somewhere,
And on the Western Stars screenings, there's a heap of them. I just did a Google. Just try Googling. If you're only Googling Western Stars, that might be the problem because of the album and the book and everything. Try putting in Western Stars screening and your area because the Lighthouse in Dublin has it and the Omniplex and Odeon chains, which are both pretty big countrywide chains, both have it as well.
Right. Okay. So there are some options there. Right. We'll move on to our second movie of the day. It is The Addams Family. Here's a clip.
Wednesday. Please, no ink stains on the table.
Yes, Mother.
Gomez, everyone we've invited to the mazurka has threatened to come.
I know. Isn't it wonderful? All Addamses under one roof again.
Yes, but where will everyone sleep?
We'll have Lurch fix up the mausoleum. It'll be like sleepaway camp.
Very well, darling.
Uncle Fester!
Brother! Don't worry, I'm okay. The plate glass window broke my fall.
Yeah. Even the trailer sounds crap. Oh, that clip sounds crap.
For films so packed with personalities, it's lacking a personality of its own, I suppose, is the problem with this. And it's surprising because I know a film you've great regard for, Sausage Party.
Yes, indeed. That's a masterpiece.
The funniest movie I never want to see again. are on board here. The two co-directors who did that are on board here. So you can only imagine at some stage in the pre-production that there were plans to make this a bit subversive and a bit kind of out there. But the problem could be in the story that I think that it's been a troubled production. There was originally Tim Burton was linked to the project and he departed it at one stage, and it's kind of been many years going and going across various different studios and all of that sort of thing. It's a pity, this one. It's animated, so it there is enough going on. I think it doesn't overstay its welcome. It's about 87 minutes, so it's enough going on, I think, to hold the attention of the small people for midterm. Especially younger kids, I would say, who may not know these characters, and you know, it's a fun way to see them in animated form. But I just remember them as kind of delightfully gothic and creepy and weird, and they do go through the motions here. Wednesday is up on a tree looking crazy with her pigtails, and you know, Morticia does cut the top bits off the roses when she's doing her flower arrangements, which I have a great fond memory of in the 90s films. But other than that, you know, it's just...
But isn't that just repeating the same gags?
Yeah, it is. And I mean, it's setting out the character's stalls, I suppose you can argue. But like, I wanted, you know, the potential here for animation was to give a whole new dimension to the characters, I think, because it's a whole new format.
Sure,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's just a disappointment, and it does feel like it's going through the motions. Again, you wonder what went wrong here, because what a cast they have, led by Charlize Theron, who's doing perfect, often accused of being a bit of an ice queen in some of her roles So a perfect casting as Morticia. She's kind of aided and abetted by a really good Oscar IMAX. There is the cackling husband, Gomez, and Finn Wolfhard, who's just so hot right now after Stranger Things, is Pugsley, the son, the maniacal son who likes blowing up stuff. And Wednesday is being voiced by Chloe Grace Moretz. So, you know, really good cast on board here. They do try bringing elements of story into it. As you heard in the clip there, it's Pugsley's, it's a makey up word, okay? It's Mazuka. He's about to become a teenager and it's a big coming of age. So all the family
are vaguely Jewish sounding, but not.
Yeah, but not too much, And they, you know, the wider family are coming to the house, and we've seen little prologue or at the beginning of the film how they came across this house and found it. Where the fun could have been is, they live in the nearby neighborhood is called Assimilation. And it's full of picture perfect, flawless kind of houses, you know, designed by this kind of Martha Stewart type character, who's a TV presenter named Marge O'Needler, who's voiced by Alison Janney, and she's done all of them up to sell them on,
okay,
basically without the knowledge of the residents. But they don't know she's spying on them either, and the Adams twig it out. So when she starts to play dirty with them, because their house is basically ruining her chances of selling them on, they're too weird, the neighbours are too crazy. So it's a kind of a war between them, this character and them.
Yeah. So okay. And Alison Janney's in it.
Yeah.
Crikey.
Yeah, everyone's in it. Yeah. It's a great voice cast. It's just, as I say too often on here, it takes magic for a movie to work sometimes.
True for you.
Yeah.
Francis in Galway. What's the name of the red? It's on our website, newstalk.com/Moncrief. You can find it there. What you can do is, if you have a phone, open up the website, bring it into a local wine shop, say, do you have that one? And they'll give it to you. It's the one with the thing around the neck anyway, saying it won't have been a big award, so that'll be too difficult to find. We're joined by Annette, who's here to tell us about some good things to do.
Hi
tonight.
There, how's it going? How's things? McGowan's and Phibsborough, they're having their singles night tonight. They've added an extra night tomorrow night due to demand. They provide everything to break the ice, so you've nothing to worry about. Just bring your wing woman or wing man. There's details on Eventbrite for that one. Staying with Dublin, Bram Stoker Festival is on over the weekend, celebrating all things Halloween. There's a packed festival there, so you can check it out on bramstokerfestival.com to plan your visit. Don't forget that if you're in Mayo, to check out Westival, that's on over the weekend as well. You can see the full programme of events on westival.ie. Moonlux on, they are live in Munro's and Galway tonight. You can check out the website for full details of all the gigs on over the weekend, munro's.ie. And on Wednesday next, A Scare in the Park, a family day, and with the Halloween theme, is on in the Folk Park in Riverstown in Sligo between 4 and 7pm. Sligo Folk Park.ie.
Good stuff. Thanks, Ned. Thanks, of course, also to Jean and Esther. Always a pleasure. And well done to everybody who took part in Jacuzzi Movies as well. A particularly excellent one this week. That's our lot for today and for the rest of the weekend, I'm delighted to say. Our production team today, Claire Collins, Michael Quilligan and Anne-Marie Kane. Ivan's up next. We will talk to you on Tuesday with a live show. It's the best of on Monday. Have a nice weekend.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.